Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 167, I chat with DTS CTO Fred Kitson about Headphone X. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded July 22nd, 2013, episode 167. Headphone X marks the spot. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use. Doesn't require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit htg.ting.com. That's htg.ting.com. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymous and unfiltered. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code HTG. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek and director of content at avsforum.com. This week's guest geek is Fred Kitson, executive vice president and chief technical officer of DTS. Hey, Fred, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So happy to have you here. Those who are tuned into the live stream at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Fred, and I'll pass along as many as I can. So, Fred, what I wanted to talk about today is Headphone X. This is the new algorithm, the new processing by DTS that simulates discrete surround sound in conventional two-channel headphones. I have to tell you, it's the best surround simulation that I've heard in headphones other than the Smith Realizer, which costs more than $3,000.
Right.
You know, so, and Headphone X is certainly not intended for that market, but rather much more for the mass market, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, tell us about it. What is it? How does it work? And I'd like for you to be as specific and technical as possible, of course, without giving away any trade secrets.
Yes, of course. Yeah, thanks, Scott. Well, I think as a general rule, I guess my aim is to make good science indistinguishable from magic. So I think the effective thing for, we're trying to do a demo that sort of conveyed that not really illusion, but the sensation of something that is happening, like it's like breathing underwater, right, with scuba equipment. You want to go into a room, you listen to, you have many, many speakers, lots of hi-fi equipment, which is great, you have a great experience. But if somehow you could capture that experience with just a headphone, that would be magical. So the algorithm is, and the goal was to do that, and of course, computation, the support that one has in mobile devices and platforms of interest has gone up, which helps to facilitate this. So the technology, as you might expect, has sort of two basic components. One is to model rooms because, as you know, we're immersed in an environment. We actually hear with two ears and we hear the secondary and tertiary reverb off the walls, off the ceilings, and that creates the sensation, the acoustic sensation we have in a room. So we model that and we do that efficiently. I think we have a good reduction of practice in terms of how one does that without having extremely long filters. And the other part is to model the head transfer function, how our ear and our head and the anatomical creation that we are allows us to differentiate something that's in front of us and something that's behind us. And we do that in a way that I think we've captured it in such a way that we have a model that's generically very powerful, applicable to most people. And we do have provisions for fine-tuning both of those, actually, Scott.
What about the the issue of optimizing for different types of headphones? We have in-ear monitors, we have on-ear headphones, and we have over-the-ear headphones. Have you taken steps to do that? Oh, and in particular, the demos I've heard have been on a particular set of headphones, the Sennheiser HD239, which I was told that DTS had, in fact, optimized the algorithm for that particular headphone. Is that a third stage of the process, optimizing for a particular type of headphone or even a particular model of headphone?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, I think in we have another category in terms of personalization. But yeah, the output of what I just described, you model the room, you model the generic head, and then you actually inverse model what the headphone transfer function is. Because as you know, they're not all the same, they're not flat. And this is something that really hasn't been addressed universally in the market. So we can do those all at one time. And you're right, the Sennheiser was one we picked because in the ability to show magic or that this was a compelling experience, we didn't want to show a headphone that cost $3,000. So we wanted to show something that was reasonable in the roughly $50 range, reasonably linear. So it does work well with that, and that's just the one we use for demo purposes. It works well with pretty much all headphones. And so, yes, we have a web services back end where you can actually either enter your headphones, you can pick from a category of overhead, over the ear, in the ear, et cetera. And then if all else fails, we can go to headphones.com. Actually, the frequency response of just thousands of headphones. So we have a user interface that allows a pretty easy way to select either visually or by model number, or in some cases, you can just kind of guess.
Oh, so users of Headphone X can, in fact, go online and pick the headphone particular model that they have, and the algorithm will be adapted for that particular model?
Right. So Headphone X we think of as the, you know, the processing, and then we have a application that goes along with that. It's not too different from the Hans Zimmerman that you've seen. And in that, you can pick either from a category, and if that's all the data you have, you can stop there and we'll do the best we can. Or as I said, you can kind of drill down, and from a category of over the ear, in the ear, you can pick either a particular model, or we will allow you to visually sort of match something that looks close and actually improve the experience even more, yes.
Yeah, I would think that the more specific you can get, the better the experience will be. My friend Tile Hertzens over at innerfidelity.com, I understand, came over to your offices and got a very comprehensive demo. And one thing that he told me was that while the demo was extremely convincing on the Sennheisers that you had there, it was less so when he moved to some other different kinds of headphones that didn't have that specific modeling in the algorithm. And so he was wondering, and he asked me to ask you if there was going to be some sort of DTS Headphone X certification, or, you know, whereby you take a look at one headphone or another and you say, okay, we'll provide the modeling for this one, but not that one because it doesn't work very well.
Yeah, I think a slight modification of what you just said is actually the situation. So yes, when he came over, we had set up the demo using this particular Sennheiser because that was just convenient. And we figured it was indicative of the sort of the generic category we're looking at. But if you have a custom-made or in-ear, we would bring that up. And in the case of that demo, we didn't actually do that. Then we do have a program with manufacturers to help them provide for us the characteristics of their microphone, I mean, or their headphones. And in some cases, we'll take the... fortunately, I would say, as we've looked at this in the industry, there's about maybe a dozen pairs that might capture, 65% of the market. So it's not quite as difficult in that respect. But we will, over time, then provide pretty much an equalization for pretty much all headphones.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are several applications that occur to me, and I'm sure that they've occurred to you more than several. For example, taking in a standard multi-track, multi-channel soundtrack, a 5.1, a 7.1, up to 11.1 Headphone X does, and then encoding it in real time, which would be something that you would see perhaps on AV receivers or preamp processors, devices that naturally handle multi-channel soundtracks. Is that something that we can see now in product, or will we see it in the future?
Yeah, that's good. Again, good question, Scott. So we do have real-time encoders running today that do headphone X encoding. And when you deploy this, as you said, it does take some computation to do that. And we've tried to be pretty economical in terms of the implementation. So that will be a product. You can envision this being done a couple different ways. I mean, it could be done in real time if you might do interactive gaming. It could be pre-processed, which is probably easiest from that point of view. And as you imagine, this could be done in the cloud. So you could have a library of content like music, or it could be movies, et cetera. And those could be pre-processed at your leisure. So we're trying to support all those models.
Right. But pre-processing, that is, you take a soundtrack and at your leisure, as you say, pre-process it into Headphone X, maybe provide that as a separate audio track on a Blu-ray disc or one of the selectable audio tracks from a streaming movie or something like that. That locks you in then to a particular head-related transfer function, room, and even headphone EQ, right?
Right. I think in that model, what you might entertain would be if you actually had encoding, maybe similar to Hans Zimmerman in a situation where he actually created the score for Man of Steel in his studio, and that's how he heard it. And for a lot of people, it's compelling to experience exactly like Hans did. So in that case, you want that fixed encoding so that it will sound just like it sounded to him. For example, my daughter's into One Direction, the British boy band. And okay. for her, it's much more compelling if it sounded like it was recorded wherever in Liverpool, for example. So we can also do, if you're doing a movie, if you're doing a music, you would imagine a studio. If you're doing a concert, it could be a U2 live concert that was actually done outdoors, and you'd like to sort of experience it as close as you could. So those can be tailored, but I think the most common use would be when there's a recording studio, then we would model that studio. So this would be working with, for example, if you're working with The Voice, let's say, and you had the room in Universal, for example.
Mm-hmm. Weeb in the chat room is asking, what do you think about Beats, these particular headphones? Or do you have any official thing to say about any particular model of headphone?
Well, I could say something about Beats. We basically are working with a lot of manufacturers of headphones, and that might just be one of them. So I think we can improve the experience pretty much with any headphone, and that one in particular. So we would like to, you know, look what the market has, and sometimes headphones are chosen for fashion statements. Some people like red, some people like white, some people might like orange. But it's nice because the oftentimes just the electronics can be more stable, more repeatable, manufactured more consistently, and sometimes that can help as well.
Mm-hmm. Web7700 in the chat room is asking, what source material is there today?
Well, we're in the process of creating the tools that will, hopefully proliferate the world with that. We do have some major studios that are looking at taking libraries and encoding that. So at rollout, we will have content. You can see we have some in the movie, music, and we're doing real time. One thing I guess I'll take some risk here is in live sports, for example, that's one of the more demanding examples where content is created continuously. And people like ESPN, for example, we're working with to have real-time encoders for this content in fairly compelling venues that I probably shouldn't talk about specifically. So in the near future, you'll see not only real-time content, but also high-value content that you might see at Cinema Now or something like that.
Well, certainly sports content, you would need to have it encoded in real time because most of the time you're watching sports live. And so what you're saying is ESPN is planning, you're working with them to encode the content and send it out that way, encoded in Headphone X?
Yeah, maybe I can say that if we talk about, let's say, something like X Games, all X Games are broadcast currently in Neural 5.1, which is a multi-channel approach. It can be used in like XM radio. It's used, a lot of sporting events like Kansas City Chiefs just come to mind randomly. And Major League Baseball. So all those events currently do encode DTS multi-channel audio. And so you can imagine enhancing that to take the multi-channel and then going into a headphone X encoder. And 11.1 would be the best, of course. We have technologies like NeoX, which upmix from 5.1 or 7.1 to 11.1, which would facilitate the most immersive and compelling 3D audio experience you can imagine mm-hmm. on headphones.
Sports also brings up a question I had earlier, and which would also apply to some concert footage, soundtracks, which is being outdoors. You talked earlier about how one of the elements of the process is to model the room in which you're in. How do you do that with an outdoor venue?
Yeah, I think I can probably mention Kevin Cleary, who basically is in charge of the audio for all X Games events and a lot of sporting events. And if you take baseball, for example, that's a pretty big outdoor arena or outdoor studio. And if you look at the displacement of microphones in the stadium, I went up to San Francisco, actually, where the Giants play. And you can see the about 37 microphones typically put out there in the stadium. And you can imagine you would have microphones around home plate to capture the crack of a bat. It's a fairly signature event at a baseball game. But you also have microphones on the way to the dugout, so you can catch someone's high five. There's some out on the warning track as you get towards the outfield. So I guess you can capture someone running into the wall. So there is a typical sort of formula for capturing audio in a stadium. In a similar event, we can capture the acoustics of that like a room, and we can actually give you an experience if you want to be like if you're around home plate, where you're around first plate. So we can actually generate an audio signal that's not where there is not a microphone, for example. And going forward, just to sort of advance a little bit, we're working on multi-channel audio, something we call MDA, multi-dimensional audio. And one of the things you might do is actually collect up the acoustic data for, say, a baseball. So obviously you're not going to have a microphone in the near future on the baseball. But you could actually generate the audio associated with a baseball, and then we could, in that case, simulate what it might sound like going into the glove. So you could actually have experiences, audio experiences, where there aren't microphones.
Well, you bring up MDA, multidimensional audio, which was originally started to be developed by SRS, which DTS recently acquired. And I was going to ask you about MDA as well, and how does that interface with Headphone X, or does it?
Well, the basis at DTS is we have our HD encoder, decoder. I mean, that's something we've been doing. Of course, that's what you see on Blu-ray. And that's kind of the basis in terms of looking at some of these interactive applications. But also, MDA is a uncompressed format that would allow the example I just described, where you could have the raw data or the bed be from a baseball game. It could be from a concert. And then that same content can be rendered in a discrete speakers environment. It could go to a sound bar, it could go a combination, or it could go to a Headphone X. So you might imagine Headphone X, actually a partner in this case would be Elemental, that would has worked on tools to do real-time encoding. That could be streamed, and then you would, of course, decode that and hear that on headphones.
Mm-hmm. F-Loop in the chat room is saying that most effects-y stuff sounds great for a while, then becomes wearing and maybe gimmicky. And he wonders if Headphone X will be something that people eventually turn off, even if they like it initially. You're advocating that it will be a lasting value. And certainly what I've heard of it seems to indicate that it works very well. Although I will say that Tile Hertzens also mentioned to me how he heard in the demo, he heard you played for him the channel identifiers, a voice saying right front, left front, center, side, right, surround, you know that. And then hear it again on the headphones, and it had a bit more of a chirpy quality to it. He thought that might be effective in helping to localize in headphones or a approximate the localization. And that right there might be something that I'm reminded of by F-Loop's comment. What are you doing to keep this from being quote unquote gimmicky and natural sounding?
Yeah, that is a very important topic. It's something that you think about 3D glasses and fatigue on the eyes and things like that.
Yeah,
there's an actual
call
there. But you know, of course, we're the hearing is a fairly stable thing, and you're something that you're trained to, and you've your brain has accustomed itself to distinguish audio behind you, to the left of you, to the right of you, and so we think that if we can recreate that as natural as possible, that would mitigate that problem. But if that didn't work out to satisfy the question, we have a stereo mode. So if you think about what's your preferred way or what's how people typically listen or consume audio, oftentimes they have two speakers on a desk or in a room. That's could be in a car. So if you like that mode, we can virtualize as if there were two stereo speakers in front of you. So for some reason, the immersiveness or is not what you want to consume that because you've consumed more content, not at a concert, but in this way, and you want it to sound that way. We actually do have a mode that would hopefully, again, eliminate that problem. So once again, you would basically generate as if there were two discrete speakers right in front of you, even though you're listening to headphones.
Well, certainly giving the consumer more choice than less, I think, is a very good idea.
No, I guess, Scott, maybe I think if we went to gaming is a pretty good example. But in that case, if I watch my son playing Tour Duty Modern Warfare 2, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, he can listen for 5 hours with headphones on. And it's actually a competitive advantage if you can hear somebody behind you or someone sneaking up the ground below you. So in those cases, there might be a compelling reason to keep the headphones on in that mode.
Sure. Well, I've got a lot more to talk about. But before we do, I'd like to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors for this episode, which is Ting. Now, what is Ting, you might ask? Well, it's a no BS mobile service. It's basically a reseller of the nationwide Sprint network. Now, the beauty of Ting, one of the many, is that there are no contracts, no early termination fees. There's no bundling or ride-along services. You can choose from XS through XXL service levels for voice minutes, text messages, and megabytes of data, all billed separately. There are no overage charges or penalties and no add-on charges. No mysterious line items on your bill and unlimited devices on one plan. Each device on a plan costs a flat $6 a month. There's a powerful online account control panel that lets you take control of your account, your usage, and your bills, and no holds barred customer support. You can call 1-855-TING-FTW anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and a real person will pick up the phone. How often can you say that? Not very often in my experience. They also have excellent online customer support as well at help.ting.com with forums, a simple and powerful help ticketing system, video tutorials, startup guides, and much more. First, you purchase your mobile device from Ting, which you'll receive in 2 to 5 business days. Then you activate your device with Ting, and you have the option to select a new phone number or port an existing one. Ting will break your rate out by minutes, text messages, and megabytes, and bill you at the end of the month for what you've used. That's critical. Now, all you have to do is visit Ting today at htg.ting.com to save money and better manage your mobile phone usage. Check out their savings calculator and see how much money you or your company can save. Home Theater Geeks viewers also save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up. So visit htg.ting.com and start saving today. And we thank Ting very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the TWiT Network. So I'm talking with Fred Kitson about Headphone X, DTS's new surround simulator that simulates a surround speaker system around your head. And I have to say, in the demos that I've heard, the sense of the sound coming from speakers outside of your head is truly remarkable. Tile and everybody I know who has heard it agrees. When you hear the demo, you first start by listening to the speakers. You have an 11.1 array of speakers around the demo area. Then you put on the headphones and you listen to it again. And I know I did. I took the headphones off to make sure that those outside speakers weren't on, which they weren't. So I just want to say how effective it really is, at least with the headphones that you provided with the demo. And we talked about this earlier, about whether or not using different headphones with that particular EQ preset might be as effective or not as effective. I'm hoping that we end up with a list of headphones. As you talked about, you can actually go onto a website and say what headphones you have, and the algorithm will adapt as best it can, either to a type of headphone, in-ear, on-ear, over-ear, or even a specific brand, right?
Right.
Yeah,
that's so far that's worked out. That's been pretty robust. It seems to work robustly with different heads, different room models, and with different headphones.
Mm-hmm. Now, can Headphone X be installed on existing devices via firmware, or does it require some special hardware?
There's a couple choices. The today's modern ARM processors that are very generic in tablets, for example, and then modern smartphones, can support the decoding algorithm. It's like in the order of 150 MIPS. If you look at probably a preferred implementation would be a firmware, if you were to say that, in terms of somebody like Qualcomm, the major supplier actually of digital signal processing chips for pretty much all smartphones. Matter of fact, their last processor, I think, is in the order of 100 million in terms of its presence in the marketplace. So we're actually work with people like that. There's a new processor called the 8974 that a quarter of the chip could actually decode a 4K video. Something like that has no trouble in implementing this algorithm. So we will be on the plan of record of having that go out in embedded into a smartphone, set-top box or tablet, and then it's actually ready to be utilized within the device itself, or you could imagine an application that's downloaded that has that capability.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly we did see that with the Z Plus app, right, which is now available for the iPhone and now Android as well, right?
Right, and there's more to come. And in short order, you'll see actually even from Hans Zimmer a couple of new releases coming out with new movies, and you'll get some other content to play with, yes.
Good. I'm glad to hear that, because I have to say that for me, the demo of the Hans Zimmer score that came with the Z Plus app, as I mentioned before, the identification of which speaker was being played at which time is very effective. But the Hans Zimmer score is so, this is for Man of Steel, by the way, is so expansive and so enveloping. I wasn't sure how effective it really was at demonstrating Headphone X in particular. I know that he remixed the soundtrack, right, specifically into 11.1 channels. And for example, the drum circle part of the score, right, he recorded, right, like 12 drummers, I think, in a circle. And that does sound like it's coming from all around you when you listen to it. But the localization effect, it didn't seem to be as effective to me as I might have wished. And so hearing that there's going to be other examples is very heartening. I'm glad to hear that.
Oh, good. Yeah, I mean, I think these things, Scott, are always a blend of certainly there's art, science, and technology. You come up with an experience, right?
Yeah.
And Hans, is certainly trying to create the bigness, the expansiveness of obviously someone flying out in space. So I think that the bigness was probably by design.
Yeah.
If you look at his particular theater setup, there is a actually, if you go back and look at it, and you could see that the center channel is pretty close to where he was sitting as opposed to the right and left. So there is some of that maybe to do with the specific and studio he has at home to create that. But those things are all controllable. And yes, going forward, we have an application under development, and that will have some examples we think are punchy and quick and hopefully illustrate to people the excitement that you had when you got your demo. And you're right about the localization. I think that's part of the ability to kind of show off a bit and show that we can have precise control of where the origin of a sound is. And you can actually control that as well. You can sort of, what they call, you know, decorrelate that a bit and make that sound localization be broader. But we wanted to show that we do have control over that.
Got it. Got it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the first big push of this technology into the marketplace is for portable devices. Have I got that right?
Definitely. Yes. Yes. I think that was sort of, you know, by design. As you know, DTS is known for its presence in the cinema, presence in the home, and creating those experiences. And I think our mission is to take that compelling audio experience and bring that to mobile devices.
Yeah. But the but obviously then you're going to want to expand beyond that into AV receivers and set-top boxes, Blu-ray players, even TVs, although TVs these days don't even have headphone outputs anymore.
Yeah, it's getting a little bit specialized. But yes, all those markets are addressable. And I think in the TV example, you can imagine you can have sound bars and you can have discrete speakers that could be rear speakers. And we have the ability then to optimize that experience. And then you do have the wireless. You know, some people do like to sit on the couch with their headphones as well. So we can accommodate all those in that case. But yes, AVRs, most definitely. We will show that sort of thing at CES this year.
Ah, very good. You probably can't reveal any specifics, but will we see products with Headphone X incorporated into them sometime this year or at CES from a variety of manufacturers?
Let's just say that's the right time frame, yes.
Yeah, I know. You're under tons of NDA, I'm sure.
Somewhat restricted here, but that's exactly would be sort of the time frame, and you can imagine there's quite a bit of interest for this. So
yeah,
it worked out.
Definitely. Undermined in the chat room is asking if DTS has worked with any DAC, digital to analog converter, or headphone amp makers to incorporate Headphone X.
Well, we do have a prototype in that department, so we do anticipate that. You could do a slightly better job. We've worked with AVR manufacturers, the most notable ones. You'd probably guess what they are. And we're also trying to look at lower cost devices so that you could imagine you could have Wi-Fi the home streamed and it could be decoded on, let's say, a tablet. And the tablet then could have a HDMI output. And that could go to a device with a simple D-to-A converter that would allow a very low cost, sort of AVR equivalent, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's I would say that's not our highest priority right now, but yes, we do have prototypes of doing that. And that could actually, like I said, make a very low cost solution.
Yeah. I was just at the HeadFi meetup in Los Angeles over the weekend, and there were a ton of DAC and headphone amp manufacturers represented there. Some of which are pretty low cost, and it seems to me this would be a natural fit for many of those.
Yeah, and then you could imagine this being embedded in the headphone itself. So those sorts of things are ongoing as well.
Right. And in fact, that was my next question, because the first company to actually announce a product with Headphone X incorporated in it is Turtle Beach in some of their headphones.
Yes, of course, they're a nice Salt Lake City company. They definitely show up at a lot of surf shops, skateboard shops. They have a lot of endorsements from celebrities and sports in particular. And Kevin Durant, I saw recently, for example. So, yeah, it's a good life brand. And also, I think when you think about them, they definitely personalize in terms of colors and endorsements, as I said. And I met with their CEO, and he's quite interested in making sure that they have the best audio experience and the best quality in those as well. So I think it's a good synergistic coupling.
Now, aren't Turtle Beach headphones also primarily used in gaming as opposed to critical music listening or movie soundtrack listening?
Yeah, I would say they acquired a game company recently. It's a definitely focus for the company, and it is something that they do show up in gaming quite frequently. And yeah, you'll see long lines at the watching people to get new games and new headphones. It's amazing how long and how much money people spend on a hand. And they, I mean, you can buy a game for $50, $60. You maybe even buy a game machine for a couple hundred, but they'll spend $350 on the actual headsets because they're on their heads continuously. So yeah, they do have a great reputation there. And not that my son is one person on the planet, but all his friends have Turtle Beach headphones. So.
Oh, wow. And how does that work exactly? I mean, normally a pair of headphones, you have an audio cable that you plug into a headphone output. How does headphone X get incorporated into the pair of headphones?
Well, yeah, two options. One is you could actually do decoding on the headphone itself, or you can keep the headphone generic and have it tuned so that the processing could be done on the game machine. That's one choice. Another would be pre-computed content, in which case it's a PCM signal and basically an analog output going to regular headphones.
Mm, but that would be on the game console. These Turtle Beach headphones are claimed to have Headphone X in them. So would they connect to the game console by a digital connection, like a Toslink or a coaxial digital? Or
yeah, that's where we're exploring is the different options. They would have different models, but would actually have decoding done on the headset itself. So you would have to have that particular. And yes, you could have that would be a digital signal going in, and you would actually generate the audio signal in the actual headphone.
Right.
Then there's also ability to do other types of enhancements they're looking at too. They've experimented with subwoofers and different things to give sort of a gaming sensation as well in the headphones themselves.
Mm-hmm. Best case scenario in the chat room is asking, where is the Android Z Plus app? He hasn't been able to find it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That's being released. So it's I've seen it running, but it's probably not up in the store yet. So we'll get on that real quickly for you.
Ah, okay. Somehow I thought it was all. I understand that it was behind the iOS release of Z Plus, but somehow I thought it had been released by now, but not quite yet, huh?
Well, maybe I'm a little outdated. It hadn't been last time I checked. So. Maybe that's okay. A new event. I'll update your audience if that's the case. But I have not downloaded it yet. Sorry.
Okay, but in any event, when it's available, it'll be in the Android store
marketplace. Yes.
Marketplace. Okay. Yeah. I'm an iOS guy. So what do I know from Android?
Yeah. I'm an equal opportunity app developer. So.
Yes. Exactly. Let's see. There were another couple questions. Best case scenario. Can you please ask? Could Headphone X work on stereo speakers? That would mean it could compete with soundbars. Well, it's not meant for speakers, is it?
No, you do. You do lose something when you go. You can't do the head transfer function. We do have a kind of a Speaker X development that's sort of leveraging some of these principles to do improve that experience. So that with two discrete speakers, you definitely can make a better sensation of envelopment and immersion than you currently do. So we are working on that, but it's a slightly different processing.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people who have done that already, tried to simulate the effect of surround sound coming out of a pair of speakers or a sound bar or something like that. On the other hand, there have been a number of people who've tried to do it in headphones as well. In fact, I've got a question here in the chat room. M. Figliosi. Sorry if I mangled your name there. does Headphone X compete with Dolby Headphone? I almost hesitate to bring that up, but it's in the chat room, so I'll let you handle it as you will.
Yeah. Well, I guess the answer is probably yes. We had certainly invested in this. We showed this at CES with partners like Qualcomm. We showed it at NAB. We've, of course, generated a lot of excitement. There's been a lot of interest. So I think we're leading that. And, of course, Dolby's a worthy competitor in the audio space, and they're doing something as well.
Mm-hmm. SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room is pointing to a place called zplusapp.com, and that word plus is spelled out there. So that may be a place to look for the Android version.
Oh, good, good. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, before we go on, I do have one more sponsor to thank for this episode, and that is ProXPN. ProXPN is a global VPN, virtual private network, that works with almost any internet connection. It creates a secure, encrypted tunnel through which all of your online data passes back and forth. Any online application can work with ProXPN, including your web browser, email, file sharing, and instant messaging programs. ProXPN keeps everything you do online hidden from prying eyes, very important in these days of government spying, disguising your physical location and giving you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. So it works basically anywhere you go. Complete online privacy through a 512-bit encryption tunnel. That'll take a while to break. Works via OpenVPN or PPTP. You get to choose. Protect yourself against your ISP's six strikes rule and keep your personal internet usage private at work. Very important. You can bypass internet filtering and blocked websites, bypass geographical restrictions for internet content and online video with worldwide servers in the U.S., U.K., Asia, and more. ProXPN makes your internet connection region-free. There's software for Windows and Mac that offers advanced control, allowing you to select programs and ports you want to anonymously route through ProXPN servers. It also works on iOS and Android devices, allowing you to use your data plan or public corporate Wi-Fi with complete and total privacy on the go. Of course, they have world-class customer support. Steve Gibson even gave it a great review on Security Now here on the TWIT Network. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. But we've got a special offer. Use the code HTG to receive 20% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month for a yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code HTG. And we thank ProXPN very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks. Okay, in the last few minutes we have, I wanted to ask you about room models. We talked about that a little earlier. Basically, Headphone X includes room modeling, head-related transfer function modeling, that is the effect of the head on sound coming from different directions, and even headphone compensation or modeling, depending on the characteristics of the headphone. In terms of room modeling, I'm very interested in this because of an issue called cognitive dissonance. And what I'd love to see, and I hope that you're working on this, is the ability to, just as you can now choose the type of headphone that you're on and even the specific model of headphone you're using, will you be able to choose the type of an acoustic environment that's being modeled? So, for example, if you're watching an outdoor concert, you wouldn't want to choose a small little room because that would create what we call cognitive dissonance.
Well, the answer is most definitely yes. And we have I sort of mentioned earlier, a whole web services component of that so that people can initially have default rooms if they want, but have the ability to have those as part of the metadata that goes with maybe a certain type of content. That's another option. Then you could have the ability, as you said, to select that. And hopefully, like you said, it doesn't create that dissonance between what you see and what you hear. And, of course, that's almost the ability to induce nausea in somebody when what you see visually doesn't align well with what you're feeling from an emotion point of view. Actually, when I worked at another job, I actually designed some amusement rides with Hewlett Packard, actually, down in Houston, and that was it was very bad results if you get that out of sync. So in this case, the room model we think is a very compelling thing. We think people really do like to share those with other people, and so that they can create a vicarious experience between different locations. If you were doing some social networking or you're maybe doing social TV or watching a movie together, wouldn't it be great to hear it exactly the same and hopefully model it best for that movie or maybe just for that game or for that experience? Mm-hmm. And I've done some work in the past on making very realistic teleconferencing. And there's a lot of art that goes into that as well as science in terms of making like we're doing today. If you see that the illusion is that you and I are supposed to be in the same room, Scott, and we're sitting across from a table, wouldn't you like it'd be odd if you had incandescent lighting and I had natural lighting, for example?
Yes, very odd.
You want the lighting to be the same. You would like
the sound to be the same.
And you'd like the sound to be the same. So that's what we're trying to do. So two people could, you know, think that they're in the same room when they're teleconferencing. And also, there's like we already discussed, it'd be great to, if you're out at a baseball game, it sounds like you're at a baseball game or not.
Right.
If you want to be in the room. So, yes, we have very, very good control over that. And ultimately, if you think about it, there's audio, there's things that create motion of air. And then there's rooms that create reverb. And then there's people that hear them. And that's the formula. So, yes, we do want to model that. And we can model that very, very precisely.
How about allowing consumers to create their own head-related transfer function? Is there any thought to allowing customization at that level?
Well, I'd say we are going to do a subtle version that direction, which would be we will model generic, and that seems to work very robustly. The way we have incorporated in some applications now is we ask a couple of tests. Does this sound like it's in front of you or behind you? We have a little application where a sound will go around your head, and you might be able to pick between one or two choices to sort of fine-tune that a bit. We do have the ability to create one exactly for someone's head, but we find that doesn't seem to be really necessary, although that is possible too.
Mm. Certainly that would be quite a bit more involved and probably a more expensive product if one were to offer it in a product.
Yeah, and as you pointed out when you started, when you think about Lake, that was sort of the approach. Maybe I'll just quickly comment. There's one last dimension, and that is the hearing response of the human. So we talked about modeling the room, a head transfer function. We talked about the headphones. There's also the hearing response of the particular individual perception. So you can imagine if you spent five summers manning a jackhammer or you had some other acoustic experiences that were not very good.
Yeah. For example, me, I played in a lot of rock bands in college.
Yeah. A lot of us have that syndrome. Maybe you happen to be a jet engine mechanic. But we also do have within the Headphone X suite, we also have the ability to do some tuning for your particular hearing response.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah, so we think that really covers it in terms of getting an accurate experience, you know, modeling it on headphones, and then really, really personalizing it, not only to the headphones, but to that particular hearing response.
Mm, that's very good. I hadn't heard that before. there's one other area that I wonder if you're thinking about in terms of Headphone X, mm-hmm. and that is head tracking. I mentioned the Smith Realizer at the top of the, at the top of the show, and for $3,000+, you get a box that simulates surround sound, and it also provides head tracking. It kind of looks kind of dorky. You got this thing on top of your headphones, but as you move your head around, the virtual speakers stay in one place. And it turns out that moving your head around even a little bit is critical to precise localization. And I know that Headphone X, you know, your headphones don't have this little gizmo that actually physically tracks. But one thought that comes to mind is in a lot of smartphones and tablets and so on, you've got facial recognition. And that might be used for being able to tell what the orientation of your head is at any given time. And perhaps aid in this head tracking, which would keep the virtual speakers still while your head is moving around. Any thought on that?
Yeah, you're looking at our R&D roadmap there, Scott. So I thought I had that hidden somewhere, but
okay, all right.
No, actually, that's a very good point, because that's sort of the next step usually when people think about headphones. And I think, as you said, practically, if you can get that rotation. And there's two basic modes people seem to like. One, as you said, is the fixed reference, so that as I move my head, the frame reference moves with me. Or a fixed reference, like you said, is if they're virtual speakers are sitting in a fixed location. So as I move, you'd expect that. So head tracking can facilitate that latter. And one way is, as you said, you can put a Z-axis accelerometer in the headphones. Just to be specific, Analog Devices has recently introduced a small, cheap chipset for that purpose. So that's actually achievable, economically achievable. So that's one option.
Oh, good.
Another option, as you pointed out, is to leverage some of the technology that's out there. So a lot of manufacturers would like us, if you're playing games, to use the more common PlayStation, Xbox, Kinects, et cetera. So that's another way to accomplish that.
That's in fact another technology I was going to mention was the Kinect and other game systems that now track your motion.
Yeah, so that's become more popular, and as you know, the accuracy of that's been sufficient. That works well. That works quite well. And then finally, definitely have done work on vision systems. Actually, used to be at Motorola. They had a product there where you would put it on your TV, and then you had I have a patent on a fisheye lens that would help track people in the room. And that's another way to do it. And I think the fact that more cameras now, if you've at CES, you've seen are being integrated into tablets, phones, of course, the TVs. And so that's pretty easy to like you said, track eyes. So the resolution of the cameras is such that you can do a reasonable job of tracking heads with facial data.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, we've done work here on face recognition. It turns out the distance between eyes is one of those parameters you wouldn't think of. That's a first-order way to identify faces themselves. And it's also a good way to think of even about type of content. You might even make some guesses about the type of personalization somebody might like because of, you know, their physical size and things like that, gender and things like that.
Huh.
Yeah, that's coming. I think you're right. And in gaming and lots of interactive games, that seems to be very attractive.
Well, I'm glad I was able to peer into my crystal ball there. Any other things that you're working on that you can tell us about that might be coming down the pike in this regard?
It's a similar theme. I think you look at the technology we already talked about, and you think about how would people consume audio. Soundbars are very attractive rendering device, and it has the ability to do virtualization without all the headphones. We now have a company that does a wireless speaker, so you might imagine hybrid combinations, multi-dimensional wireless audio, hybrids with discrete speakers and soundbars, creating that experience in an automobile in a similar way. Soundbars have the ability to, through superposition, you could have a multi-language. You could have Spanish on the left, English on the right. You could have two people playing games off the same screen. So there's you can have multiple conversations that sort of the cocktail effect where you could walk around and hear audio coming from different sources. So those are some of the things that are in the mm-hmm. near future.
What's the latest on MDA, multi-dimensional audio? I'm glad to have the opportunity to ask you that because I have seen some demos of that, heard some demos, rather, that sounded remarkable. And I love the idea of object-oriented audio, which you alluded to earlier, wherein each sound-emitting object is treated as an object and moved around the room. And whichever speaker needs to reproduce it for being where it is in 3D space is automatically activated and used. And the system's even scalable depending upon how many speakers you've got. My question really is, what's the state of development and are there any companies working on product that implement MDA?
Yeah. So MDA, multidimensional audio, is a component of our what we call UHD or Ultra HD program with respect to audio. And from a feature point of view, part of the demo, some of the things we show is you can have proximity, certainly can have height, and it allows the creative audio people, whether it's music or movies, to do as one does in 3D graphics for games. So you can have a helicopter, and it has a certain type of one channel, maybe you could have an acoustic wave associated with that, and then you give it an XYZ location. So those are some of the things you're able to do. We've shown the ability to change announcer from maybe a football game is an audio object, and you can change the language and location, et cetera, like that. So MDA, in terms of the state of play, this is a standard that we've published. The standard is, it's available. We have a lot of interest, and we have many companies have signed up to support that in the cinema area. We have people like Aura 3D who actually produce MDA output, and they have authored at least 20 full-length movies at this point. And I know many more in progress. We have submitted to SMPTE, for example, as adoption as a standard. And we can work with anybody who wants to support that. So it's we have, I probably shouldn't go through the list, but we have vendors now that we showed at NAB and CES that are supporting that as an output format from various tools.
So tools such as, not necessarily Pro Tools, but as we were talking before the show about digital audio workstations, tools like that would be able to output an MDA file that could then be rendered by an MDA-compatible rendering system.
Right. So if I started to mention them, I'd probably be guilty of sin of omission. So, yeah, we have...
We'll leave it out. I only use that as an example.
So we have several vendors then that are supporting that as an output file type. And I think most people agree it's been very compelling. As you mentioned, SRS it proposes an open standard some time ago. Was getting traction. Yes, DTS acquired SRS. And we feel it's something the industry wants. They want to have a format that's open, that there's no monopoly on, and they can people can compete on that. And then the compressed form. So this would be the kind of uncompressed data, and the compressed form would be the UHD would provide, which obviously DTS would support that. So I think from an industry point of view, you typically have, if you watch a movie, you'll typically have what they call a bed, which would be the typical audio. And then for special things like rockets, or it could be fish and they're running, or it could be something that's going through the air, it makes it creatively very easy to put that audio anywhere you want. And when you're listening to it, get a very immersive feel to it.
Mm-hmm. One last question from the chat room, a couple actually. Alpha One Omega asks, will Headphone X ever be on the PC? Which I imagine certainly would. You've got more processing power there than even than on smartphones. And, well, it depends on the PC, I guess.
yes. This will be embedded. And actually, we have a PC manufacturer already signed up that will, that'll be shipped. So, yes, that'll be on that platform as well. And tablets, of course.
Sure. And Dr. T asks, how is it that we can play the demo in our computers with any headphones and it works for us at home now? There's a YouTube demo, which he points to goo.gl/4NK6J. I don't know if you know that demo or not.
We have a couple we've done with some advertising firms. We have one of a barking dogs coming up and scaring people and things like that. So I'm not sure.
It should be easy to play any demo on any computer with any headphones, right?
Yeah. So as I sort of started out, I think, we work pretty hard to make science that, kind of looks like magic, that it has this ability to take a very complex audio experience and reduce it to headphones. And part of the magic, you can think about it, is you have 2 ears. I mean, ultimately, the reverb, everything's going to happen at 2 spots on your head. And if we can recreate that, that's the experience you're going to get. And I think we did it robustly enough that most people, without any customization, even substituting different headphones, will get a pretty good experience, pretty darn good experience. And with a little bit of work, it's as you've experienced, it's quite good.
Yeah. It's funny. The magic technology indistinguishable from magic, the Isaac Asimov quote, and I'm certainly very apt here. Yeah. And also, you allude to the argument for some people who say, oh, we don't need a surround system. We've only got 2 ears, so we only need 2 speakers. Which is clearly not an argument I support.
Right. The world is 3D.
The world is 3D. And the audio world, the sonic world, real world around us is 3D. So you're addressing that very well. And I thank you so much for being here and explaining the ins and outs of Headphone X to us. It's been a fascinating hour. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks a lot, Scott. It was fun. Thanks.
You bet. Now, you can read much more about Headphone X at dts.com. Of course, you can find me online at avsforum.com. And you can email me at scott@twit.tv. You can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Also, at AVS Forum, where we're ramping up our Twitter presence as we speak. You can also find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here on twit.tv/htg and on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/twit/home theater geeks. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Yoan Allen of Dolby to talk all about Dolby Atmos. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I hope you will join me. Until then, geek out.